भावतोऽन्यम् अत्यधिकश्चत् तस्मिन् को मातविश्वर्धाति। Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all of his running, the powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place he holds those who supply the air and the rain, he surpasses excellence. The demigods, those who are not so fortunate to have the succession to understand these texts, like, for example, scholars, they're very fascinated with also demigod work. And with this demigod worship, they have the confusion sometimes of thinking that the Vedic literature is pantheistic, or describes that there are many gods as opposed to one supreme god. So there's one way to make that position very clear. The supreme god has his residence, or abode, or spiritual realm. And he remains in that spiritual realm. Although he remains in the realm, he is still overseeing, administrating the affairs of his. Demigods have responsibility, and he, the Supreme Lord, is controlling everything that they're doing, but without leaving that spiritual realm. We, in this physical plane, we can't do it. To control so many things, although staying in one realm. How that's done is described. Twice the reference is made in the translation. Although fixed in his abode, clearly God, it is more swift than the mind. It's faster than anybody's running. And again, though he's in one place, the demigods who control the universe of the universe are. The Supreme Lord, who is the absolute personality of God, cannot be known by mental speculation, even by the greatest philosopher. He can be known only by his devotees through his mercy. In Brahma Samhita, it is stated that even if a non-devotee philosopher travels at the speed of mind, for hundreds of years, he will still find the absolute truth far, far away from him. This reference that we read from the purport is described in this, you might be confusing. Just the one that you first received. Is it from Brahma Samhita? Just read in the purport, what Prabhupada says. This is to, we're going through this exercise just to show how Prabhupada uses quotes from the Veda to confirm his point, to back up his point. So he's making the point, based on the verse, that philosophers' minds, even if they're very, very expert philosophers, for how far their mind can travel, because the speed of the mind has a certain limit. So if they're the best philosopher, best mind, best developed mind possible, still it's not possible, still it remains beyond their reach. No transcendence they will conceive of the spiritual world. Prabhupada makes that statement to prove the statement, or to verify the statement. He makes reference to this verse from Brahma Samhita. I worship Vinda, the primeval Lord. Only the tip above whose lotus feet is approached by the yogis, after the transcendental, and betake themselves to pranayama by drilling the respiration, and then this part, or by the jnanis, of the philosophers, who try to find out the undifferentiated Brahman by the process of elimination of the mundane, extending over thousands of millions of years. So philosophers use this process of excluding, to understand what is God or spiritual, they do this by a process of excluding most of the material. Is floor God? Is the tape player God? Is the desk God? Is the air? Is the sound in the air God? Each of these things, it's not this, it's not this. By excluding the mundane, they try to arrive at whatever is left that's non-mundane, spiritual, or Brahman. So by that process, by philosophical process, or empiric philosophy is called, you can't, as fast as the mind can accomplish this thing, thousands of millions of years, you still can't approach transcendence. The mind, the speed of the mind in this regard is just described here. The speed of mind is so quick that if you think of visiting London, say you visited London today, you think of that experience in London, immediately the mind is there. That experience that you had in London, you know, the mind went to London. That's how fast the mind is. And that, with that same speed, if the mind travels for hundreds, thousands of millions of years, mind will never be able to approach or encompass these spiritual realm. So that's the meaning of this. Although fixed in his own, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind. He's in one place, but the mind still can't catch up. As described in the Isha Upanishad, absolute personality Godhead has his transcendental abode, known as Krishna Loka, where he remains and engages in his pastimes. Yet by his inconceivable potencies, he can simultaneously reach every part of his creative energy, a rate of energy means the material creation. So he's in the spiritual world, and the facilities that are provided within this creation can't reach him. The mind, so swift, can't reach him, and yet he can control everything. He's in his spiritual world. He can control everything at every moment. We can't reach him the same way, but he can reach us without any effort. The Vishnu Purana's potencies are compared to the heat, light that emanates from fire. Again, point is being made. Although situated in one place, the fire can distribute its light and heat all over. Similarly, the Supreme, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, though fixed in his transcendental abode, can fuse his different energies everywhere. Sometimes this heat and light analogy, the heat and light of fire, is compared to the spiritual and material worlds. The spiritual world is expanded from the Lord's internal potency, and the material is expanded from another, from the material potency, external potency. So although these two ends, like heat and light, expand from the fire, or the spiritual creations expand from the Lord, the expanding of that heated expanding of the material and spiritual realms don't diminish God's existence. God's existence can be known by the presence of those energies. The presence of heat might indicate to us that there's a fire somewhere nearby. But the presence of light in the room indicates is the cause or source of emanation of that pain. Similarly, we know about the presence of God through the presence of His creative energies. Understand? We know there must be a controller here. All these various energies being manifest, there must be an energetic. And as they are moving and being controlled in Him, so then we can know something about His capacity to control. And the cause by which He controls, we can indirectly figure out and discern those laws. But laws also indicate a person who makes laws and a person that enforces the laws. In other words, a controller, a higher controller, a higher power. These are all very simple and fundamental arguments just to help people understand that there is God and how we can understand how God is working. Right on time. Any questions so far? Although fixed in His transcendental abode, the Supreme Lord can diffuse His different energies everywhere. Although His energies are innumerable, they can be divided into three principal categories. The internal potency, the marginal potency, and the external potency. There are hundreds and millions of subheadings of each of these categories. The dominating gods, who are empowered to control and administer natural phenomena such as air, light, rain, etc., are all classified with marginal potency of the absolute purpose. Living beings, including humans, are all products of the Lord's marginal potency. The material world is the creation of the Lord's external potency, and the spiritual sky, or kingdom of God, is the manifestation of His internal potency. This is just describing now these three different energies. The soul, with the same quality soul is there, whether demigod, human, or animal, or other species. The soul quality is the same. So that's the marginal energy of the Lord, the soul. The soul, tiny soul. Then another energy of the Lord is the external energy, meaning physical creation, cosmic creation, the internal potency, all the affairs of the spiritual world, not just the planets, say, the spiritual planets and the spiritual sky, but all the activities of residents of the spiritual world, they're also conducted by the internal potency, just as all the activities of the creation are conducted by the external potency. The living entity falsely thinks something else, because identifying with that thing, now I am walking, I am speaking, I am moving, I'm sitting, I'm standing, I'm getting old, I'm going to school, I'm going to... These are what the external energy is doing. The soul is not doing those things. The body is doing those things. Soul is not doing things. Due to false ego, ahamkara, it thinks I am this, I am and old and young. Soul isn't old or young, or man or woman, or any of these kinds of bodily considerations. That's an energy of the Lord that is manifesting each of those entities. The different energies of the Lord are present everywhere. Different potencies. Although there is no difference between the Lord and his energies. One should not wrongly consider that the Supreme Lord is distributed anywhere impersonally, or that he loses his personal existence. This is important. As the energies of God are expanded, we shouldn't therefore wrongly conclude that because he expands, then therefore also the origin, as the energy is not, as this floor is not person, therefore God must also be not person. That's one conclusion. That backward logic is not correct. Nor that by the Lord distributing his various energies everywhere, that he loses his personal existence. For those erroneous philosophies are sometimes argued. The example is given, if you take some piece of paper, some complete thing, and make it into a little small piece, and then distribute those small pieces. You throw the little piece of paper throughout the room. Now the original paper is scattered and gone. So this is an argument that a good personal philosophy has, that if you were to gather all of this pieces of paper again and put them all together, then you have the original paper. Similarly, their line of reasoning goes, if all living entities again become one, that is God. So this argument is, this argument goes back to the first mantra, that although so many, Vishnu, although so many complete units, from him, he remains the complete balance. Although so many energies are expanding from the Lord, that doesn't diminish him in any way. And again, this point that although the energies be not manifesting full personal existence, that shouldn't be concluded that the Lord is also personal as the energy. Nor is his personal existence lost by distributing his energy everywhere. Men are accustomed to reach conclusions according to their capacity to understand. But the Supreme Lord is not subject to our limited capacity for understanding. It is for this reason that the Upanishads warn us that no one can approach Lord by his own limited potency. So this is now making the reference back to the verse. That although Krishna is situated in his original existence, the philosopher cannot know him. If we try to figure out the existence of God based on simply this external energy, we won't know about the soul correctly. We don't know about the spiritual world either. Nor will we even know about this material creation correctly. Because this material creation has its relationship with God, to try to understand a thing without its connection to the whole, without understanding the part in relation to the whole, you won't understand the part correctly. To try to understand heat or light without relation to fire, we won't understand it completely. Because the heat or light isn't just existing independently. The existence of heat light is dependent upon some other existence. The existence of fire. So this is, the examples are given to practically illustrate the shortcoming of the mind to try to capture God, to conceive of the inconceivable. Can't conceive of the inconceivable. The mind being that instrument that helps us to conceive us. We can't conceive of the inconceivable. Although, so the verse says, fiction is abode, he is swifter than the mind, and he can run faster than all others running, overcome all others running. Mm-hmm. was on dirt. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 2, and that's the feather. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 2, the Lord says, did not even the great rishis and suras, so suras means demigods, or saintly persons, and rishis means? Huh? Right, exactly. Learned persons, sages. So not even the great rishis and suras can know him, and much to speak of the asuras, who are not even qualified to understand the ways of the Lord. This mantra, this fourth mantra, clearly suggests that the Absolute Truth is ultimately the Absolute Person. Now, it's suggested, but it doesn't come out and say it. We were discussing this when we first began studying this Upanishad. But the Upanishads are there specifically for philosophers. The devotional texts, meaning Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and devotional texts because it's like, you know, getting hit over the head with a lead pipe. They're so plain. So this Krishna's making the conclusion of devotion to this devotional service so plainly clear. But there's a class of persons who aspire to know the Supreme, but they prefer a philosophical approach, or they prefer not understanding what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita and speculating. Therefore, the Upanishads are there. The word, just breaking down the word Upanishad, Upa, refers to construction. It's like you put a book on the shelf over here, Upadeshamrita. The same root, Upa. That Upadeshamrita means nectar of instruction. Amrita means nectar. If you pass around and drink the shot of nectar drink, Amrita. Upadesh Amrita, or nectar of devotion. Read that book?
Yes.
We're also having nectar devotionasins here. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Amrita, nectar. Nectar, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, nectar of devotion. So, Upadeshanta, Upa refers to instruction. The Upanishad, instructions, Nishad, one that brings one closer to the Supreme. Philosophers want to approach the Supreme, but at the same time disregard who actually is the Supreme. They don't want to wholly submit themselves in devotion to Bhakti. They prefer stretching their brains out, as far as men, exercising their brain power, their philosophical or intellectual power, to try to encompass or approach the scene. So therefore, Prabhupada is saying, mantra 4 very clearly suggests the Absolute is ultimately the Absolute Person. Absolute Person. Because impersonal is knowable by philosophical means. You can reach the conclusion philosophically that I am not matter, but as described by the process of eliminating the mundane, you can reach the conclusion I am not any of these things. It's called definition by the gate. I am not this, not this, neti, 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 not this, not this. You can reach the conclusion I am spirit, not these other things. But you can't by that process know any person. You can't know of the spiritual world personality by negation of the mundane. Therefore, indirectly, it suggests that which is unapproachable, more swift than the mind, is the personal peace. Understand? Otherwise, there had been no need to mention so much variegatedness in support of his personal features. That's there from other verses also. He walks, he does not walk. He's very far, but he's near, very near as well. He's in everything, but everything. He has brilliant, intelligent features are being described. Features of the Supreme indicate, variegated features of the Supreme indicated a variegated Supreme. If it weren't for this personal aspect, there would need to indicate at all any kind of variegatedness. But variegatedness is indicated. In other words, because they don't want the serenity of the Supreme, very obvious indications are left to allow to reach that conclusion. They want to derive some satisfaction by beating their brains, so they can beat their brains to arrive at conclusion. Because so many obvious clues are left. Rather than, because there's a nice verse of the Gita that describes that there are different classes of people who achieve the Supreme. And one class is described as who simply are satisfied to receive knowledge by hearing from higher authorities. Those persons can very quickly and think reach the conclusion and achieve perfection of life. But there's another person, these jnanis, who they don't like it like that. Rather, they prefer beating their brains. And so for those persons, then there are all these clues that indirectly indicate when making its claims vague. Yeah, that's the purpose of these Upanishads. One who is a personalist, or one who realized the conclusions of all the scripture simply by hearing from realized authorities, that person can also hear these mantras and little signs or clues or hints or the indications of variegatedness become very clear. Why those indications are very good, so there's nothing to figure out. It's just very clear why they're there. And the Prabhupada's purports, putting all these clues together, already taken care of for us. We don't have to have a big brain muscle to figure it all out. All we have to do is be submissive to hear and be cleansed by the pure sound vibrations coming from realized sources. And then, in that cleansed state, to further vibrate the same vibrations, speak the same message to others. That's the cleansing process. Shravanam Kirtanam. We have to chant it. Although the part parcels, let's read it again. Although they have all the symptoms of himself, the individual parts and parcels of the Lord's qualities have no spheres of activity and are therefore limited. Because we're very tiny, although the quality of the individual soul is the same as God, because of its tininess in comparison to God, what we can know that's limited, our sphere of activity is limited, our body's sense its limitation, but all qualitatively the same. Parts and parcels are never equal to the whole. Therefore, they cannot appreciate the Lord's full potency. Very important, this differentiating between personalism and impersonalism. under the influence of material nature, foolish and ignorant living beings, far by parts and parcels of the Lord, try to conjecture the Lord's transcendental position. Sri Yashochad warns of the futility of trying to establish the identity of the Lord through mental speculation. One should try to learn of transcendent from a superior source, like the Vedas, which already contain knowledge of transcendence. Every part of the complete whole is endowed with some particular energy to act. When that part forgets its particular activities, he is considered to be in mind or illusion. Thus, from the very beginning, Sri Yashopanishad warns us to be very careful to play the part is designated for us by the Lord. This does not mean that the individual soul has to be inactive. This does not mean that individual soul has no initiative of his own. Because he is part and part of the Lord, he must partake of the initiative of the Lord as well. When one properly uses his initiative or active nature with intelligence, understanding that everything is the Lord's potency, he can revive his original consciousness, which was lost due to association with Maya, the external energy. All power is obtained from the Lord. Therefore, each particular power must be utilized to execute the will of the Lord and not ours. These two statements go perfectly together. Just as earlier is described, the unlimited energies of Krishna. However, for our convenience, they're divided into three categories, and from these categories, there's many subcategories. So if one keeps in mind, while of active life, as it's using these terms here, initiate activity by our creative ability, activeness, and use of intelligence, as long as we can keep in mind the fact that all these energies, spiritual, material, or the soul directly, they're all energies of God, then the conclusion is natural that those energies are the purpose of them. How they are to be interacted with and is to fulfill the will of the person whom they look at. If I visit you in your home and start looking through your closet and think, I like this sweater and this jacket, pair of shoes, then you can rest it, at least throw me out for just being rude. Because the clothes belong to you, and therefore I should understand that they're meant, therefore, to be used for your purpose. And, I like your tape player, up your stereo, and your, I like some of your cooker over here, and you have a nice microwave oven, and I just take and use it in my home because I like it. That's unlawful. Because it belongs to you. I have to recognize that some of these things is to be used for your purpose, your intention, whatever that is. So same, the living entities to the creation of God, and they should also recognize these energies are coming from Him, belong to Him, and therefore they should be used for His purposes, for it to fulfill His will. And not otherwise. The Lord can be known by one who has adopted a submissive attitude. Lord can be known by one who has adopted a submissive attitude. Perfect knowledge means knowing that the Lord, knowing the Lord in all His features, knowing potencies, and knowing how these potencies are by His will. These matters are exclusively described by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita as the essence of all the Upanishads. So much of Gita is addressing these points of how to understand how the material and a lot of details given of how the material ingredients are governed, how the different aspects of material creation are interacting with other aspects of the material creation, and how they're interacting with the soul, and how everything is going on under Krishna's direction. The statement that they're going under Krishna's direction is repeated in the poems, and how it is going on under Krishna's direction is also presented. So this theory of material nature, how it is being manifested in and how going on by the will of the Lord, is a very important subject to master. Because here we are in the material world. And one can know all the supreme through understanding how the material nature is going on. In fact, if we don't understand about a supreme is directing all these things, we'll become bewildered by them. Bewildered by their need, we'll try to bring them under our control and our enjoyment and our possession. That's the material world. That's the activities of the materialistic person, materialistic soul. As we do like that, we become conditioned by the material energy. Instead, the very same ingredients can be interacted in such a way they provides liberation for the soul. So there's a very big difference between understanding these things and not understanding these things, even one may be sincere. This is a little bit in relation to your question earlier. We may be very sincere but foolish. Knowledge is definitely necessary. How can we compare a current personality and their sincerity to the position of Arjuna? There's no comparison. But Arjuna was certainly bewildered. Didn't know what to do. Had a real strong idea about what he wanted to do and just couldn't pull it off because he didn't know what to do. And knew that he didn't know what to do. Fortunately, and then presented his dilemma to Krishna and sorted all out for him. And he was at least enough intelligence he had remaining to know that he didn't know, and to know to submit himself. That's what this point is. The Lord can be known by one who has adopted a submissive attitude. Submissive attitude is essential for the execution of devotion. Submissive attitude isn't at all essential to be a philosopher. In fact, being unsubmissive is an asset. Being unsubmissive to what Krishna dictates is an asset for you. Just like Prabhupada describes this point. The Sanskrit term puni means speculative philosopher. One becomes known as a philosopher because his ability to come up with a philosophy that no one else came up for. He's independently creative with his speculation capacity. Intelligence is hyperactive in a whole new direction. That's the philosopher, or what they're called. Philosophy. They eventually come to the point of being submissive when they recognize the limitation of that speculative element. Just as the verse says very clearly, the Supreme Person of Godhead is more swift than the mind. So as they develop their very, it's just like the middle class person that's all hopeful that if I become an upper class, if I move my income up to the higher income bracket, as the upper mobile good middle class person is supposed to think, then I'll become happy. But when they get that position, they realize I'm not happy here either. When the philosopher gets to the point of developing the capacity of his mind to just speculate like crazy, and if he's a little bit humble, he'll realize this doesn't give me perfect knowledge either. Unfortunately, too often the soul remains puffed up by that now newly developed capacity for the brain to speculate anything, thinking I'm better than everybody else who can't speculate like I can. But if they're very fortunate, then they'll also be very humble, at least humble enough to recognize there is a limit that this conveyance, the mind, can take. That can be their realization, it's confirmed within the Upanishads. So then what? Now that I've spent so much time speculating crazy, now what can I do? The answer is, by being submissive in attitude towards the message of the Supreme Lord, and one can then get perfect knowledge immediately. Immediately. Perfect knowledge immediately. Without all that Herculean mental activity. Just by submissive hearing. So, any discussion on it? Question?
Go back to know how someone can, not to take out false ego, that I have this, that, I am that kind of person. But, what do you say?
I'm not sure what you're saying. Ask it again.
False ego. That's for, like, so once someone thinking, I am, that
have
that position, or I have
like a philosopher who has the false ego thinking I'm mighty brain, or the weightlifter thinks I'm mighty body, or the, the businessman who thinks I'm Mr. Megabucks and has some pride, a false egoistic pride. So like that?
Yes, how someone can stop thinking like that.
How they can stop thinking like that? Well, the best way to stop thinking like that, initially there has to be some recognition that helps them. Just like Arjuna. He was a superhero. So powerful. Hard for us in our present situation even to conceive of how powerful Arjuna was. It was without expanding on how powerful it was, we'll just say, so powerful, and a warrior. And he had this whole idea, but he also realized, within himself, I'm something like anything. I'm completely bewildered. So Prabhupada describes that in order to take up the process of purification or rectification, to advance in any way in spiritual life, one has to get an honest appraisal of one's situation and see, I'm suffering. And I don't want to suffer. This material condition of life is miserable, and I don't want the misery. So now I'm inquire earnestly how to stop that which is going to, is unwanted within my existence, within my life. So that means a combination of starting with becoming disgusted with material existence and also being humble. And sincere about the inquiry. When those qualifications are possessed, then the other factor that actually we don't have any control over, that Krishna has all the control over, is to send someone who can give us the epistle. How to remedy disease condition. Okay. just like the taller physician can relieve the diseased man's suffering condition. You can go to an unqualified doctor that doesn't know beans about how to cure you, and you may do whatever, he may tell you so many things and give you so much medicine and send you an entry that bill. But if he's not qualified, then you're still in the same problematic situation. So, just the patient, there has to be some willingness to procure, and there also has to be the qualified to secure the disease. Someone that actually knows how to administer medicine. What disease is what, and what medicine is for which disease. So the combination of two. If I don't Prabhupada says the material world is a place of eaters and cheaters. One is always materially, compulsively, this goes on, materially calculating that as long as I'm cheating up, even I'm suffering, at least I'm on top of the heap. I'm getting the better part of the bad bargain by cheating. By bluffing to others that I know what's what, even I'm suffering the next time, I'm just saying I got the answers. I'm okay, you're okay, everything's all right. Then they'll go on with their false ego business. So there has to be, the preliminary thing is, this position of acting through false ego does not bring you satisfaction. It brings, there's no satisfaction, and it brings misery. Some honest recognition of that fact, the fact for everyone, comes first. And then the process of inquiry. Do you have to snuggle in there? Huh?
I was in Haiti.
You were in Haiti?
Yeah.
That's why we haven't seen that.
Yeah.
That was been the whole year. No. That hasn't been that long. When did you return?